Welcome to the TARDIS Library, a place to talk comics, novels, audios and more from the worlds of Doctor Who.
G'day everyone and welcome to another edition of the TARDIS Library. This time around, myself and Mike Solko will be talking about great new adventures in Doctor Who, which don't appear on television. Mike will be talking about some Big Finish audio, and I, in my usual style, will be talking about the Third Doctor adventures in the Titan Comics range. We're up to number 4 now. Before I go on with that, however, I just want to plug this Sunday's Doctor Who show will feature myself and special guest host Paul Scoones. Yes, the man who helped find a missing episode of Doctor Who back in 1999. He found, The Lion, one of the episodes of The Crusade. He's also written the comic strip companion, which is all about Doctor Who comics from the 60s through to the late 70s. He's working on another edition of that, actually, which covers comics from later on in the run. And it's a really fun time. We talk about Doctor Who a fair bit, as you'd imagine, but we also get onto some really random topics, including the state of the retail industry in New Zealand. It's far more interesting than that might sound. So do tune in to that this Sunday. Without any further ado, let's go to Mike talking about the Big Finish adventures, and then I'll come out to round out with my Third Doctor review. So over to you, Mike.
Hey, this is Mike back with another round of Big Finish audio reviews. Today I'm going to be reviewing the main range story number 221, The Starmen. It's written by Andrew Smith, who wrote the story Full Circle back in season 18. It was the story that introduced Adric to the series. And it's directed by Barnaby Edwards, who is probably my favorite director out of all the different Big Finish ranges. The story stars Peter Davison as the Doctor, Matthew Waterhouse as Adric, Sarah Sutton as Nyssa, and Janet Fielding as Tegan. So you get that core team from the original Davison season 19, and it really feels like a story that slots into that era. They don't give you an exact time frame of where it fits in or where it's threaded within the canon, but you can really see it fitting anywhere between probably about the second story up through Earthshock or so. It feels like that because it's a future story, it's set at the edge of the Milky Way, and there's an observatory, one of the most impressive ever constructed throughout the universe, and they kind of stumble into it as always. You have Sue Holderness playing a character named Calla Tace, who's sort of the commander of the base. She's the lead scientist. And Sophie Wu plays her daughter Autumn, who's an astronomer. It's a very interesting setup with this story because you have astronomy, several other different sciences, but you even have astrology represented on this base. So they're kind of trying to bridge spirituality and science and all these different things. Unfortunately, the astrology part didn't really come into play because that seemed like an interesting kind of take. But maybe next time around, who knows? Not that I'm a big astrology fan, just it's kind of fun when things that are a little more mystical work their way into Who. So the station has sent out a crew of 300 on a ship called the Kepler, and they're going out to explore a mysterious large Magellanic cloud, and it seems to defy the law of physics, or like there's something very creepy about it. And finally, when the Doctor shows up, of course he always shows up at the best possible time, the Kepler is starting to return and they can't make contact with the ship. So for the first maybe 15-20 minutes of the play, it actually has a feeling of Ambassadors of Death, the old John Pertwee story. But that's not to say that they're cribbing or anything like that, or that it's a copy. You know, it's not the first time this kind of thing has shown up in science fiction. So it veers away from that pretty quickly. And you get this crew back, or maybe you don't, but there's definitely some creepiness going on. You have red coral throughout the ship now. And the coral will sometimes also let out a red gas, which has the ability to kill or control people. And this is how we come to encounter the Starmen from the title of the series, from the episode. And these Starmen have a human outline to them, but inside is more of like a galaxy. It's astral bodies and stars and things like that. There's no discernible mouth or eyes or anything like that. So when you hear these characters described, as well as the distorted voices they have, it's really eerie. You know, I don't usually find outer spacey villains all that scary, but these guys are creeps. Like, they're definitely scary. And it's interesting because a lot of the time with Doctor Who, the plan becomes very clear up front. With this story, it does take a while to learn what these creepers are up to and what they're going to do and why they need to be stopped. You know, last month I kind of was very frustrated with Order of the Daleks, and I know that one of the things I really called out was that the stakes went from being very limited to very massive without feeling earned. And that's one thing is, Andrew Smith, the way he tells this story, the stakes do rise as you read it. and they rise in a really organic way. So in that regard, I think it's a really successful story. Another thing is he's the writer who created the character of Adric. So having him back to write a story that's very Adric-centric is interesting, and it really brings out the best in Adric. Words you very rarely hear. You know, Adric has all these mathematical skills, as well as he has a heroism to him that I think a lot of the time gets overlooked, because we always think back to Adric as being a very whiny character or petulant. And in this story, you know, he still has some of that whine and teenageness to him, but at the same time, we get to see some of the better aspects of the character, as well as maybe a little romance, which, you know, so if romance for Adric is your thing, you know, he and the daughter of the commander, Autumn Tace, being the character, they hit it off throughout the story. And it also feels very kind of cute and very natural. You know, you have an astronomer and a mathematical genius, so there you go. And so seeing that develop through the story is kind of fun. As well as maybe this one pokes some holes if anybody's an Adric Nissa shipper out there. Maybe you'll want to avoid this one, though. It probably wouldn't be for you. So, you know, without going too much off on that tangent, Nissa and Tegan really don't get a lot to do in this story. They're fine. The performances are very good. But it sounds like with this trilogy of stories they're doing with the Fifth Doctor right now, the idea is going to be to focus in on each of the lead companions. So this one's Adric. I'm not sure if the next one's Nissa or Tegan, but they'll each get their moment in the sun, I guess, or the moment in the stars over the next few stories. So again, they're not bad, but they just didn't get a lot to do. And that's really tough when you do these kind of stories with four companions, because you also have to figure in background cast, villains, monsters, all these different pieces, as well as giving the Doctor his own opportunity to shine. And I think it's easy with a story that's so character-focused on one of the companions to overlook the Doctor, and I'd really hate to do that in this story. Putting my cards on the table up front, the Fifth Doctor era is really not my favorite era of the series. You know, it just never clicked for me in a big way. And a lot of that is because the companions, everybody didn't really work for me. And I feel like the Fifth Doctor got overwhelmed or overpowered a lot by the personalities around him. This is a story where the Fifth Doctor works extremely well. At one point, he's paired off with a group of military kind of soldier types called Custodians, which was a kind of clever name to call your army group. And so seeing him working with them and not really being on board with their tactics, but at the same time respecting them and gaining their respect is fun. As well as just the one thing Davison's Doctor is able to do is he feels very human. So when he has that indignance, when he has that anger or fury about something that's happening, it feels much more tangible than maybe one of the more outrageous Doctors. Because when they do, there's a bit of pomposity to it, or just, it feels much more judgy, whereas this comes from a very human perspective of anger. So when he gets worked up in this story, I'm right there with him. So again, televised Fifth Doctor stuff, maybe not my favorite thing. But from what little I've heard of him in the Big Finish ranges, I really appreciate, and I want to start branching out and trying more Davison stuff. Thankfully, I have 2 more months of Davison to try out, so we'll be hearing more about that in the near future. I know Rob's probably over there rolling his eyes right now as I say this, because I know he's a big Fifth Doctor fan. So let's see. Maybe over time I'll appreciate him more, maybe not. Rating the story is a little tough. I kind of have been going back and forth between 7 or 8 is a range out of 10, and because it didn't really feel like there was anything necessarily revolutionary about the story, anything that was really exceptional. But then I realized I was really glued to it over the 4 episodes that I listened to over a few days, and I was very curious to hear what happened next. I was on board with the characters. I was invested in Adric. And that really hasn't happened maybe since, Legopolis. So the fact that I was actually on board with this character, and really on board with all the characters, I've got to give it 8 mathematical stars of excellence out of 10. It's sometimes easy to feel frustrated that the story isn't like some over-the-top outrageous thing that's completely amazing. But this is just a really fun Doctor Who story. It has menace to it. It has science. It's just neat. So if you enjoy this era of Doctor Who, I really recommend it. If you're a fan of the character of Adric, I absolutely recommend it. You've got to check this story out. And maybe if you don't like Adric, I don't know. Maybe you want to avoid it, maybe you don't. But it's a fun time. And that's my review, is I would give this one 8 mathematical badges of excellence out of 10. It's really worth your time and worth checking out. And if you go to the Big Finish website, all you have to do is sign up for their newsletter. You'll see a section that says Big Finish for free if you look under the ranges. And if you go in there, there's all kinds of good stuff for free you can check out. But you can check out the first 30-minute segment of this story. And probably by the end of that, you'll have an idea if you're on board or not. So, hey, all you got to do is sign up for a newsletter. and then you get 30 minutes worth of a story. You can find out if you like it or not. And hey, the worst thing that happens is Big Finish sends you newsletters in the mail telling you they've got a sale, and next thing you know, your bank account is drained. That's how it's happened for me. One other piece I'll do a quick review on is called Tom Baker at 80. This is an interview conducted by Nicholas Briggs, who is, of course, the voice of the Daleks, as well as one of the head creative forces behind Big Finish. And he sat down with Tom back in January of 2014. It was around his 80th birthday. And they just talked about Tom's career, his life, everything leading up to becoming an actor, as well as quite a bit of stuff after he left Doctor Who. You get an insight into who Tom Baker is, why he is how he is. You know, you've probably heard stories about how he can be very difficult, or he likes to improvise quite a bit when he's doing stories. So you hear about that quite a bit here, be it in his theater work or stuff later on. Now, to be honest, this does only have about 30 to 40 minutes out of 2 hours where he discusses his Doctor Who work. There's not in-depth analysis, so if you want to hear all about the Android Invasion or any of the Graham Williams stories or any of it, really, you might get a snippet here and there, but there's not that discussion about season to season, anything like that. It's more of a general stuff. He reminisces quite a bit about some of the actors he works with, as well as a few of the producers. His remembrances of John Nathan Turner are kind of funny as well, because you get the feeling they didn't get along. It's also neat because you get to hear him discuss some of the other doctors, and he kind of had a bit of a rivalry, or he would try to wind up John Pertwee, and he has very kind words for some of the doctors who came after him, even though he didn't necessarily finish the series or stick with it. You know, he seemed to like Sylvester McCoy quite a bit, which of course is fond for me because that's my favorite doctor. You get to hear him talk a little bit about some time he spent at conventions and how he interacts with fans, and that was a really touching part of it for me. There was a part where I actually welled up hearing one of the stories about how he interacted with a fan and just how much he meant to that fan. You know, I don't know if Tom always quite gets why we're all into Doctor Who so much, but he's so respectful of the fans, and it's neat to hear him discuss this here. There's been a lot of Tom Baker-related interview merchandise lately. Doctor Who Magazine 501 had a really great series of interviews with him that took place over a few years, and I think it was like something like 60 pages worth of interviews with Tom. So you're not going to hear a whole lot here that's maybe different from what you've read in those articles, but the fun part about it is you get to hear Tom joking around and laughing in that giant bombastic laughter and voice, and just hearing him bring those stories to life is a lot of fun. And Nicholas Briggs does do a very good job as an interviewer as well. So you can find this for $7 US on the Big Finish website for download. It's only about like $11 and change for the physical CD. If you're a Tom Baker fan, you know, it's been Tom Baker's birthday within the last few weeks here. So, you know, if you just want to kind of learn more about Tom or just laugh and hear his wonderful voice, it's a good investment. It's worth $7. I don't know that, you know, I would really go way out of my way to pick this up. If you're not a Tom Baker fan, or if you're not necessarily interested in things he's done aside from Who, this one's probably not going to be for you. But I would probably give it 6 or 7 Jelly Babies out of 10. Just depends on how much of a sweet tooth you have on that given day. For the Starmen, I give it 8 Mathematical Badges of Excellence out of 10. And Tom Baker at 80, I would give it 6 or 7 Jelly Babies out of 10. Thank you all so much for listening, and I will be back soon with more Big Finish audio reviews.
Thanks for that, Mike, and as promised, I'm now going to talk about Doctor Who, the Third Doctor from Titan Comics, issue number 4. Now, for those of you who have been following my reviews, I've been spoilerific in some and not so spoilerific in others, and this time around I kind of have to be spoilerific because everything to do with this issue is really based around, well, I just have to say it, Salamander. Salamander is in this story, and in fact in this issue of the comic we see Salamander falling out of the TARDIS, as we see in Enemy of the World, and we learn that he survived and ended up in the UK in the 60s, or as he says, well, maybe it was another decade, so tying into that whole unit dating controversy, he's trying to express that he's been on Earth for 10 years, so we don't know whether it's from like the mid-60s through to the mid-70s, or maybe the mid-70s through to the mid-80s, depending on when you think unit was running around. And we get further background that he's invented the micro-machines, they're the robots that have been causing havoc in the early issues of the comic, and now he's on the verge of inventing time travel. Well, not so much inventing time travel, but reverse engineering it, as it were. He's been spying on the Doctor these past 10 years. Interestingly, he says he's had, you know, contact with government people who don't trust the Doctor, so they've been feeding him information. He's also used advanced technology to spy on the Doctor that can't be detected by this decade's technology, which I found quite interesting and quite plausible as a storyline. Of course, the Master has popped up in earlier issues as well, and now we have the Master teaming up with the Doctor, all sealed on a handshake. Very Legopolis, that, because the Master, of course, doesn't want to see humans having access to Time Lord technology. And of course, if humans have Time Lord technology, he might have competition as to who could rule the world, and he can't have that, can he? So he's not entirely altruistic, the Master, but he is teamed up with the Doctor here, and they go after Salamander. Essentially, that's a large part of the plot of the issue. The fact we see Salamander's backstory, we learn what he's doing with time travel, and then we have the Master and the Doctor converging on Salamander's lab. Some interesting scenes. Obviously, UNIT are there, so there's the typical UNIT sort of action going on. The Master uses the tissue compression eliminator on one of the scientists and shrinks him down to size. It's all very cool stuff. My one gripe, before I get into wrapping up on the issue, my one gripe with it is the look of the micro machines. They look so... well, they look modern, but there's just something about their look that sort of jars with the Third Doctor era. I think I'm still looking for maybe men in rubber suits or something that just really fits the Third Doctor era, because so much of this comic harks back to the era, but the look of these micro machines, it's just like, I can't quite imagine Pertwee fighting this adversary just from the way it looks. I know that's a small quibble, and it's maybe a weird quibble, but it's the one thing that takes me slightly out of this story, because everything else is just so Third Doctor era and so spot on, and Paul Cornell's done a great job with the story and the dialogue and all that sort of stuff. That's just the one thing that really gets me about it. Anyway, to wrap up on the comic, and given that we've had so many spoilers already in this review, the fact that the whole laboratory zips off into time at the end is... I quite like it. I think that is something I would see in the Pertwee era. It's almost Three Doctors-ish, actually. You know, when you think of UNIT headquarters disappearing and reappearing, it's along those lines. So, to summarise, so much of this comic is so Third Doctor. It's very enjoyable. Everything's spot on. The Doctor, Joe Grant, the Brigadier, the Master, Captain Yates, Sergeant Benton, Salamander, I mean... what else could you fit into this? It's really interesting to see where this one's going, and I'm really, really enjoying having the Third Doctor in a modern comic book. It's really great stuff, especially in the same month that we have some classic Pertwee comics appearing free with Doctor Who magazine. If you bought the latest Doctor Who magazine, and this is something Paul Scoones and I will talk about on the Doctor Who show this Sunday, there's a reprint of some Pertwee comics in there, and that's really great to see too. It's great to see earlier Doctors in comic form. I'm personally hanging out for when Titan decides to do a Fifth Doctor series. I'll be collecting that. I'll be getting all the alternate covers. I'll be going absolutely crazy when my Doctor ends up in a modern Titan comic range. I think that'll be just great. But hey, Pertwee as well, just fantastic. Now, speaking of next time, issue number 5, there are some great covers. Interestingly, cover A isn't the most interesting of them, by Andy Walker. It's quite good, as is cover B, the subscription cover, which for photo cover is quite good. You often hear me talk about how photo covers aren't always the best. My vote goes for cover C next time by Brian Miller. It's this really stylized version of Pertwee driving Bessie like a maniac over the top of a hill. He's got one of the wheels off the ground, and it's just very primary colours, very stylized. It is an awesome piece of art. Cover D and cover E I could take or leave for next time. So if you're in the market for issue 5 when it's coming out, do look for cover C by Brian Miller. I think that is the pick of them, and that's coming on sale in February, so not long to go now. Look, I think I've covered everything there. A bit spoilerific, but hopefully not too spoilerific, if I can put it that way. And until we meet again on the TARDIS Library, next time around I hope to have some really big reviews from Kevin and the rest of the gang who have been working on some special stuff. So stay tuned for that, and we'll talk to you then. And of course, we will see you again this Sunday on the Doctor Who Show. Do tune in for that if you can. All right. That's us done. Nice quick episode. Hope you're having a great day wherever you are in the world. Do write to us at hello@thedwshow.net if you've got anything to say about Big Finish or Titan Comics or anything to do with Doctor Who media that's out there. There's so many great stories out there at the moment. It's just crazy, especially for an old fan like me who grew up with just Target novels every month of shows we'd already seen. It's just wonderful. So until next time.